this back out.
I believe I can fly.
No, I don't.
Oh, shit. I thought like Lucas or Isaac was like talking to you through the door or something.
Yeah, that's what they do. They wow. just randomly open the door and start singing.
Hello and welcome to the Ritual Misery Podcast, episode beta 22 for Wednesday, the 28th of January, 2015. This is a show where two lifelong friends talk about geek stuff and whatever else comes to mind. I'm Amos, and with me as always is my friend Kent. How you doing, man?
I'm all right, dude. How you doing?
You know, it's been a, I don't even say a busy week. It's just been a very time-occupied week. Let's go with that.
Yeah, right. I can understand that.
I haven't really gotten a whole lot done. It's just, I haven't had a whole lot of free time for anything.
Yeah. So what's the big news? What's going on?
My sister-in-law had her baby. That's pretty much the big news.
Awesome.
Yeah.
The miracle of life.
my wife and I are swapping out the stay with her duties.
Mm-hmm.
She's a first-time mom, so we've been, you know, trying to help her out, give her some pointers, this and that. She changed her first diaper on her own baby today.
Awesome.
She was pretty grossed out by it.
as well she should be.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that it wasn't bad. Evelyn Grace Elam is her name. Came in at just shy of 8 pounds. She's cute. She doesn't have a chin, but she's got really big cheeks. So it's
squeezable cheeks.
Yeah, she's pretty adorable. And in case my wife listens to this, no, that does not mean I want another one. it's not bad. It's fun watching a first-time mom go through it after having had a few kids myself. It brings a different perspective to it, a little bit different different feel. So, not bad. But that's pretty much the big news of my week. My stepson and I sat down and watched Mad Max, the original, the first one.
Very cool. What did he think?
He left about a third of the way through it.
Oh.
And I don't blame him. I gotta say, man, I don't remember watching it as a kid. I thought I had, but after watching it this weekend, I don't remember watching it as a kid. And I don't think I would have, and I don't think I'm going to again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it did not hold up to the scrutiny of today's standards. The story was pretty long and drawn out. It's about a 2-hour movie, and it takes an hour and 45 minutes to get to the main plot. It has important elements to set up the rest of the series, and I'm still going to, I tried to watch Mad Max 2 Road Warrior yesterday, but I fell asleep because I didn't get through the credits. It did the 80s thing where it does the credits as soon as the movie starts.
Right.
So you,
right.
You basically sit through 10 minutes of black screen with white text.
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember as a kid that Road Warrior is the better of the two.
Yeah.
And then I really liked what's the third one? Beyond Thunderdome. I really liked that one too.
Yeah, so I'm gonna keep going with it. But yeah, the first one I'll probably never watch that one again unless forced to.
Well, it's like the Rambo series. The first one, First Blood. You know, it's not like the rest of the show. The rest of the series. It's kind of its own thing. It's kind of slow and very drama heavy. But I really love the other Rambo movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Pretty much. First Blood. So yeah, anyway, that's pretty much been my week. That's the big news. Super Bowl was interesting. But everybody already knows about that, so no point in getting into that.
Right.
You watched the Super Bowl, but you did it in kind of a fun fashion, something a little more relevant to me sitting on the couch and pulling out the man card and watching the fights in the Super Bowl all in the same day.
Right.
But how'd you go with it?
Well, let's back up a little bit. My weekend started out Saturday with a karate tournament. Went up to Belen, New Mexico, had a tournament. Lots of fun. It was really cool. Participated in 3 events. I did akata, I did sparring, and I did chanbara, which is basically like It's like samurai sword fighting, but with foam swords. Pretty cool. Yeah, I did okay. I got a second place and two third places. So, you know, if Josh, one of my friends from my dojo, if he hadn't gone, I'm confident I would have gotten at least two first places. But, you know, that's fine. That's fine. He took third in all three of those events, and we were in the same division, so he kind of cock-blocked me on that. But no, it was.
Would you say he kata blocked you?
Oh, maybe.
Probably not.
Yeah, no. I would never say that. No, it was a lot of fun though. I enjoy going to tournaments, and it was a pretty good time. My only criticism to it though was that this tournament was really, really, really long. It started at 10 in the morning, and we didn't leave until 8:30 that night. Very, 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 very long.
Wow.
But, you know, that's okay. It was a good time. There was good competition. I always like at the end, it's all the adult black belts doing their fights and stuff like that. And that's always really cool.
Yeah.
I did get to see something that I've never seen before, and even my sensei had never seen before. Someone did a cartwheel during sparring. Yeah, that was interesting. I'm glad I was there to see it. And the dude's like a fifth dan too. He's like a fifth degree black belt, and did a cartwheel.
Wow.
While sparring. Yeah, yeah. Don't ever do that. That's useless. But anyway, it was, you know, hey, check that box. Something I'd never seen before.
Yeah.
So anyway, all right. So that was fun. And then Sunday morning, excuse me, Sunday early afternoon. A few of us went to the dojo and did some work there. We remodeled our bathroom and put up some benches, some new benches in the locker rooms. And, you know, that was cool. And then right after that, we went to my house to do a little impromptu Super Bowl party. So that was fun. We did nachos and a few other things, and watched the game. Sort of. We kind of watched the game. Nobody cared about the Seahawks or the Patriots. So we watched it sort of, and then we were like, you know what? Let's play Cards Against Humanity. So we started playing probably right after halftime. We just started playing the game. We're like, yeah, screw it. Nice. If the TV gets noisy, we'll look at the TV. But yeah, we're just gonna play this. So it was a lot of fun. I mean, any of our listeners know, or any, you know, if anybody has ever played the game, it's a blast. Cards Against Humanity is so much fun.
Not for the weak-minded though.
Yeah. not for the innocent of mind either. Yeah. I mean, other than that, really about the only thing I got going on right now is sick kids. The crud is hitting the household pretty severely. I have not fallen victim to it yet.
Stay tuned next week
exactly.
For the further adventures of Kent's illness.
Next week, I will try to be just like Amos and talk about how I was sick over the weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is what we refer to as foreshadowing.
Dun, dun, dun. We shall see.
Yeah.
Hopefully not. Hopefully not, but I would not be the least bit surprised.
If my audio is working right now, I'd play the sad trombone sound, but unfortunately it's not. So I have one specific thing this week that has helped me get through all the tedious hours of sitting around waiting for baby and then helping mama as she was, you know, in and out of sleep with the baby, and just kind of keeping my mind occupied somewhere other than just in this one little dark room with a brand new baby and a first time mother. I started playing Clash of Clans this weekend.
Oh, you're one of those guys.
I have not played it at work, although I haven't been at work to play it. So, it's, you know,
The jury is still out on that one.
Yeah. It is fun. I'm getting to the point now. I've been playing it for, since Saturday. So 4 days now. 5 days. I'm getting to the point now where I'm having to wait extraordinary amounts of time for minor things. You know, an upgrade will take, you know, 30 hours or whatever.
Oh, geez,
So I'm getting to that point where it's kind of tedious, and I'm starting to lose interest in it. So on the other hand, my SimCity Build-It Village is max population for what I can do with it right now. Essentially, I've got to start tweaking it and customizing it and maximizing it. And I'm just not quite ready to devote that much time. Both these games are free, by the way. They're freemium games, means you get to play them for free. But if you want to advance faster or usher the game along a little faster, you can pay money. And I don't do that.
Right.
Haven't found a game that's
awesome. Yeah, awesome business model, but not one that I am going to partake in as a consumer.
Right, but it's great. I mean, you saw the Fire Age or whatever commercials during the Super Bowl, and you know, these freemium games are making money, but
tons.
Just not for me. So there's that. Speaking of things that are making money and making waves, you wanted to talk about commercial drones this week.
Yes.
I'm drones. Very interested to see or to hear your personal takes on this issue. So go.
Yeah. So drones, unmanned aerial vehicles or UAVs, remotely piloted vehicles, RPVs. RPAs is what they're called. Remotely piloted aircraft. Anyway, that's what happens when you take poor notes, folks. They go by a bunch of different names, but the media has pushed the term drone. Not the biggest fan of the term drone, because that to me that means that it's an autonomous vehicle, meaning that you basically program a flight path into it and then you send it on its way and it does its thing. That's what I consider a drone. But basically most of these things are remote control. Whether that's a guy just standing on the ground with a box and, you know, the old school RC plane style, or even as elaborate as what the military uses, and you're inside of a box and you've got a computer control station where it basically looks like you're playing an arcade game.
Right.
But a very, very sophisticated one. But anyway, just a little bit of background, me being an Air Force guy, back in 2003, I got stationed at Creech Air Force Base in Nevada. Actually, it wasn't even called Creech yet. It was still just called Indian Springs Air Force Auxiliary Field. So I'm dating myself there. But anyway, the big deal there was the Predator. And me being a weapons troop, I was one of the first weapons troops to be PCS to Creech, or Indian Springs at the time, to do weapons work on them. So I was right there at the cusp of the weaponization of drones, if you will. I've got my own opinions and my own thoughts about UAVs, RPAs, drones, whatever you want to call them.
Right.
And the uses of them and the value versus morality and all this other stuff. I've got a ton of thoughts on that, but that's not what we're going to talk about. We're not going to talk about the military version. We're going to talk about the commercial version of drones, which is becoming a thing. The last couple of years, it's kind of sprung up as, something that the market is wanting, the market is delivering. And these things they're getting pretty popular very quickly. And the issues that are coming up are very interesting. And it's kind of interesting to watch it unfold, because there's, on one hand, there's a lot of money to be made. So the commercial industry side of it is, you know, pushing for, you know, let's get more of these out. Let's test this out. Let's try this. Let's do that. On the other hand, governments, not just our government, but governments pretty much worldwide, are kind of like, whoa, hold on. We don't know how to regulate these things. So there's a big push to to get regulation out there for the industry. And right now that's just really lacking. One thing that's interesting to note here is that in the United States, if you're just a hobbyist, you're just a guy that, you know, I found a drone on the internet and I bought one, paid about $1,000 for it. I can go out to, you know, some park or whatever. I can fly the thing my heart's content, and there ain't shit anybody can say about it because it's not against the law.
Right. As long as you don't go over, I think, like 600 feet or don't go to any air-restricted areas.
Right, of course. Yeah, I mean, you don't want to fly it in, you know, into airspace, like, you know, around an airport or a military facility or, you know. I mean, common sense applies here. Right. But for the most part, you're fairly unrestricted as a hobbyist.
Until you go into a national park.
Then it gets kind of tricky. But if you're a commercial user, if you're somebody that, you know, you want to utilize this technology to make money off of it, so you invest money into getting training for your employees to fly these things. You want to certify them. You're, you know, giving them quality training. These guys are the expert flyers of these machines, and you want to put their expertise to use and make a little bit of money.
Right.
And the government says, no, you are not allowed to do that unless you apply for an exemption, which several companies have. I think there's about 8 companies right now that have successfully lobbied the FAA for an exemption. So it is possible, but it's kind of right now it's kind of the infancy of legislation on these things. Well, not even legislation, it's just regulations put out by the FAA, or the lack right now the lack thereof. They basically just said that commercial users, no. Yeah. Hobbyists, fine. So it's kind of a slow going thing for us to be breaking into the commercial use.
It's one more example, in my opinion, of the technology far outpacing the bureaucracy. It's one of those things where the government's like, well, we can't figure out exactly what to do with this right now, so let's just shut it down and slowly allow it, as they've done so many times on other things, like the internet right now. The whole debate about the internet with the FCC, stuff like that, is a reaction instead of,
Yep. Absolutely.
So it's reactive instead of proactive. That's what I was trying to say. Now, I do understand. I mean, there are certain things that companies can do, but part of the problem with commercializing drones is that the FAA wants you to maintain line of sight on it at all times.
Right.
Which, if you're doing it in a commercial aspect, unless, you know, because like Amazon wants to deliver packages, they'd want to put it on a little drone, have the drone fly to your house, drop it off on your front door, and fly back to Amazon, pick up another package. Unless they're only delivering across the street, that's going to make that pretty much impossible. And drone litigation or drone regulations in general, I think there are certain things that we're going in the right directions on. I don't want to be hiking in Yosemite and have someone's drone following me the entire time.
Absolutely.
You know, I think there are some legitimate restrictions to drones and as far as where they can fly, when they can fly, that kind of thing, and who can fly them. I can understand certain things like that. Like if they want you to get a permit to fly a drone in Yosemite, I'm good with that. I'm also good with if you want to make them have a permit to camp or a permit to fish. I get it. That way you can control how many people are doing it, and you can kind of keep tabs on it a little bit better than just rampant, you know, exploration of rampant droning of Mount Rushmore, you know?
Right.
I'm good with that. It's I don't like the blanket no. You know, can you imagine if California had said, no, there's no possibility of ever having automated cars?
Yeah, right.
You know, but they didn't. Yeah. They said, okay, well, you can only do it with these guidelines. And those guidelines have gotten more and more open as the technology and as experience has gone with it. And I'd rather have the FAA do something like that than, you know, just lock it down and shut it down completely like it looks like they're trying to do now.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of encouraged by the exemptions that they're handing out. If you can present your case to the FAA and prove to them reasonably that you're going to use them safely, use them for this very specific purpose, and that you've got proper, you know, things in place, you know, they will listen to your plea, and they have granted it to several companies. One company, I think the most recent one, I don't remember the name of the company, but they're using it to monitor their, I think it's, I want to say it was oil, no, it was an oil refinery. You know, there's places, you know, they'd have to shut down the refinery, and it's very difficult to get people, you know, to the areas that they need to inspect. Well, with these drones, they can just fly the drone up there while, you know, without even shutting down the plant, they can fly the drone up there, take a look, good to go, okay, cool, and then come back down. Saves them a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of resources, and they do it safely. It's contained within their plant. And they appealed to the FAA, and they granted them the exemption. And I think that's the right move. And I think as long as companies can, you know, basically prove that they're not going to be a menace to society, if you will, they're going to get the exemptions granted. And what I think is cool about it is that the more exemptions that are granted, that's setting a precedent. So any future regulation or even legislation is going to learn from the you know, the exemptions, and even the exemptions that are turned down, the applications are presenting data, you know, to the regulators and the legislators on this.
Right.
So that, my, you know, my that, worry I think with, that's encouraging.
My worry with all that is if you have Joe Schmo working out of his garage and has a great idea for using drones in a commercial sense, who has the money to invest into his company and buy the drones and buy the technology and, you know, do the software on his own time and all that other stuff, doesn't have the money to hire a lawyer to appeal for to the FAA and all that other thing, it's going to kind of shut him out of that. So
yeah,
as long as it's a, you know, I'm not going to put a qualifier on it. I'm just, I'm worried about the small guy, the local guy.
Right. Well, I think, I mean, in a practical sense, I think what they can do, you're talking about a young entrepreneur that's basically building his business out of his garage. He can consider himself a hobbyist, and he can fly his drone around, and he can gather data while he's flying it for fun in the park. Basically, he can test some things and gather some data and whatnot, and see if it's feasible. He can get to the point where he does have a case that he can present. Now, granted, yeah, I understand what you're saying about, you know, legal fees and you know, I don't know what all is involved with the filing for an exemption. If you need, I don't know if there's a monetary portion of that.
Right, the filing fee, you know, or whatever.
But, you know, that's the great thing about the internet, though. That's, you know, that's where Kickstarters and things like that can come in. If you've got the idea of the century, somebody is going to fund you.
Yeah. Well,
you can get commercial sponsors and whatnot, but like I said, the wonderful thing about today is, you know, crowdsourced things are, you know, it's an amazing way to go about it, because you get enough people excited about something, they're going to throw money your way.
Right.
And, you know, I think there's a place for that. The thing that I think is crazy, though, is it kind of seems backwards to me about the, you know, we don't let commercial pilots fly these things. People that have been trained, have been certified through various companies and whatnot, they're not allowed to fly these things. Yet you or me, who, like, I've never even flown like a normal, you know, old school RC airplane. I've never flown. The best that I've gotten is those little helicopters you can buy for $50 at the mall.
Yeah,
you know, I've flown one of those and crashed it into the wall a couple times.
Couple dozen times.
Yeah, you and me, we can go buy one of these things. They're like $800 on the internet for like the newest, coolest ones.
Yeah,
they're like $800. We could go online, grab one of these things, we can fly it to our heart's content, and nobody says anything about it.
We could fly it straight into the White House.
Well, you know, that's already been done.
Damn, yeah, that was bringing up old shit again.
Yeah, that was actually, I think that was less than 2 weeks ago at this point. That was kind of a black eye to the people that, you know, the proponents for commercial drones and all that kind of thing. That was kind of a black eye, and it turns out that the guy might have been under the influence of alcohol when he lost sight of his drone and it happened to fly into the White House lawn.
Kind of a black eye on the Secret Service as well, but, you know.
A little bit.
They didn't discover it until the next morning when it was light outside. So it's.
But that kind of leads me to my next point. You know, there's two sides to the same coin. You know, there's the amazing technological advance that these things are presenting. There's so many things that you know, good things that can come from this. There's this could help with firefighting. I'm talking not necessarily what we have available today, but if the commercial growth is allowed to take its natural course, there's going to be so many things that we can do with this. Firefighting, monitoring and repairing infrastructure, there's agricultural things, search and rescue, that's a really big beneficial thing. Communication services, their delivery, like what Amazon is trying to do, but right now they're not allowed to do that in the U.S.
A lot of those are civil applications, though.
There's other things too. Like
we could hire a company to go out and do our search and rescue stuff, but then we hired a company to do our prisons, and I'm completely against that. So that's one of those things that I'd have to really look into to see if I actually support it or not. But it is an interesting point.
Right. You know, and then of course this has been, at least on an amateur scale, has been utilized quite successfully for filmmaking. The things that you can do with these things for filming, because all these things have like a GoPro type camera mounted to them.
Right.
That it's you can take amazing video with these things, and you control it with your iPhone, and take, you know, just awesome. You can basically film a movie with these things, shots that would only be possible by renting a helicopter and hiring a pilot. You can now do this. You can buy these things for $800 or less, even for some of the lesser
your
models.
Your GoPro might cost more than
than
the drone.
Exactly.
And I'm not excited about that because of saving Hollywood money. I'm excited about that for the indie artists, indie filmer, you know, the guys that are actually making good content out of their garage. You know, that's
right. That excites me quite a bit. Kind of like what we are, or what we're trying to be.
Something along those lines, yeah. Yeah, but yeah, I'm never going to use a drone to I'm not going to say never.
Not yet. But the other side of the coin here, to address some of the cons, though, some of the, you know, less desirable effects that could come from drones. Invasion
besides
of
the accidents?
Well, yeah, I'm going to get to that. Invasion of privacy is a big one. A lot of people are concerned about that. As you know, people on the internet are a lot of them are paranoid about their privacy. Well, this is just like any emerging technology. Everybody's going to be paranoid about it in the beginning and like, oh no, what evil is going to befall me with this new thing? But invasion of privacy is a thing. And like you were talking about going to Yosemite and you got this drone following you because some jerk off is, you know, just wanting to be a dick about it. And there's not a whole lot that you or I could do about it if that was happening. Invasion of privacy. Yeah, that's a thing. Aerial attack. How about that one? That's, you know, I mean, in the military, of course, we've weaponized these things, but that's a whole other thing. You could put a device on there to just drop a rock. Imagine flying this thing at 400 feet, drop a rock on somebody. That's going to fucking suck.
Yeah, but on the same token, I'm all about the possibilities of taking a water balloon to one of these and dropping it on my neighbor's dog, you know.
Yeah. Now, see, yeah, that's awesome. That's a lot of fun. Or even just to your kids or the, you know, the neighbor kids or whatever. It could be a lot of fun. But no, I mean, but there's serious implication. I'm talking about a rock, you know. I got a cut on my forehead. No. But
start talking about dirty bombs or whatever else.
Exactly.
Of course, I mean, if you got a dirty bomb, you're going to deliver it one way or the other anyway. So.
Right. Well, even not even a dirty bomb. You can just put a dynamite based time bomb on it, or put it some sort of a fuse on there. That's maybe it's an impact fuse or something like that.
Just Molotov fly it contact in, cocktail.
Yeah. Just fly it into a building, blow some shit up.
Too soon.
There's that, and then I think the FAA's biggest concern, though, is cluttering of the skies. If these things really become prolific, there's going to be hundreds of these things. I mean, potentially hundreds of these things per square mile, airborne at any given time. And that's obviously is going to become an issue. You're going to have to regulate traffic patterns, and you know who can fly at what levels, and all of these sorts of things. I mean, obviously they're already saying, you know, you can't fly within a certain distance of airports and over certain
altitudes and
yeah, and all that sort of thing. But as these things become more and more and more and more prolific, you're gonna have to make it even stricter. And I think that's kind of one of the things that the FAA is wrestling with, is, you know, where do we draw the line, and where, you know, what. Because they want to, if they're going to write some regulations, they're going to want to plan for the future. They don't want to just, okay, you know, the seven people per city that have one of these things, they want to plan for, you know, when 7,000 people per city has one of these things.
Right.
And then another thing is, what happens when these things crash or run, you know, they run out of juice, or, you know, something malfunctions in it? It's going to fall out of the sky. Where's it going to land?
Right.
It's going to land on me. It's going to land on my kids. It's going to land on my car. I'm going to crash through my roof. You know, like those are all things that need to be addressed. And I don't think any of those things are insurmountable. Not necessarily through regulation. I think the right kind of regulations can help this a lot. But I think it's mostly the industry is going to regulate itself. As these vulnerabilities or deficiencies make themselves known, because we're going to allow commercial users to test these things, hopefully, come on, FAA, make this happen. As the commercial entities test their own devices, these things are going to be found, and they're going to be fixed. Yeah. The industry will regulate itself and fix itself. We're not going to buy the faulty product. We're going to buy the one that the one out of, you know, the eight companies or whatever, the one that found the solution to fix this problem, that's the one we're going to buy. So then all the other companies will follow suit. That's how industry works. That's how commercialism works. Come on, FAA. Give us some good regulations. Make us safe, but please do not hamper the commercial
possibilities.
Potential. That's what I was looking for. Potential. Do not hamper the commercial potential, because this is the future. Like it or not, this is the future.
This could be the thing that leads us to our jets and cars.
Yeah. Yeah. This probably is a stepping stone. Where are our flying cars, by the way? This is 2015. I haven't seen a single flying car yet.
Yeah.
I'm gonna keep bitching about that all the way through this year.
We barely got hoverboards. I mean, come on.
I know.
There's a lot of innovations that have to happen this year, and really quickly.
The Cubs need to win the World Series.
Oh, that's already lost. they're not even in spring training yet, are they?
I don't think so.
One thing that I wanted to mention this week, completely unrelated to commercial drones. Not necessarily. The unofficial Apple weblog was shut down this week on the 3rd, which I believe at this point would be 2 days ago.
Yeah.
It was a blog focused specifically on Apple, and it was one of my favorite websites. It's one that I visited every day for years. It originated back in 2004 with its sister publication, the Engadget. In 2005 or so, AOL bought the company, the parent company. And AOL is currently condensing their technology blogs and gaming blogs into fewer and fewer properties. I don't know how much money it costs them to run these sites, but it's a sad day for authentic journalism. Because even Engadget, this article that I found, what site is this? Fast Company. It's an article on that. Fast Company. Okay. Yeah, fastcompany.com. It expresses my point of view exactly, that Engadget used to be about gadgets, and now it's kind of about tech and just whatever tech stuff wants to come out. And, these other sites, Gizmodo, was all about gadgets, and they kind of, expanded past that as well. Tua always remained loyal to Apple. It was always an Apple weblog. It never branched out. It never reached too far. It was always authentic journalism. They kept to the facts. They did not speculate. In fact, there's one of the regular contributors would go on there and take other people's speculations and show the holes that were in the stories. And it's really just a sad day for authentic, specialized journalism. I don't know where I'm going to go now for my Apple specific news that I love to keep up on. There's some other sites, 9to5 Mac and things like that, but the way that Tua did it was really just right up my alley, and I loved reading the articles and I loved keeping up on things, and it's a sad day, so I just wanted to throw that in there. That's kind of the story of the week for me. I know there's a lot of world events going on, but for me personally, that's the story of the week as far as the greater world is involved. It's a sad day.
Yeah, and I'll agree with you on that, but I think that these journalists, they're going to find another place to do what they do.
Some of them are going to be folded into Engadget. Some of them are being let go. We'll see.
Yeah, I think something's going to emerge from this that's going to be it's going to be right up your alley, and it's going to be as a direct result of this. And I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully, we can hope.
Yeah. it's sad to see a traditional journalism form of journalism with traditional values going away in the digital age. It's sad.
Yeah.
So my TED Talk this week was a video of a gentleman. I can't even remember his name, and I just closed the window by accident, so that's amazing.
It's Jake Shimabukuro, I think. Shimabukuro. Jake Shimabukuro.
Yes. Playing Bohemian Rhapsody on an ukulele. And if you've never heard someone play on the ukulele, it's an instrument that has its own sound. It's kind of like a fiddle to a guitar. The ukulele is kind of like a slack key fiddle almost. It's a very melodic sound, it's very rich, and it's very happy inducing in my opinion. And he plays Bohemian Rhapsody on just one ukulele. Does the whole thing where he keeps the rhythm and strums the notes for the vocals all at the same time, and it's pretty good. It's really pretty good, and I enjoyed watching it. It's only like 10 minutes long. Just look up Jake Shimabukuro and Bohemian Rhapsody, or just ukulele TED Talk, and it pops right up. So that's my TED Talk thing, my TED Talk of the week, and unfortunately, you don't remember what yours was. So
yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I watched a TED Talk because you issued the challenge last week. So I was like, oh, I'm going to knock this thing out right away. So last Thursday, I watched a TED Talk. Yeah.
Didn't write it down.
No idea what it was. Well, obviously, it didn't leave an impression on me. So yeah. I need to try to pick a better one this week.
That's unfortunate.
But the couple of things come to mind here. First of all, the ukulele, I'm going to agree with you 100%. Everything that you said, it's a great instrument. If you haven't heard the ukulele live, preferably sitting in a circle with some of your friends, and when one of your friends pulls one out and just starts playing and singing completely out of the blue, that's how I think of the ukulele. I've had a lot of Hawaiian friends in my life, and that just kind of became a thing. You were just sitting around eating some food, and oh look, there's an ukulele. Oh my gosh, he's singing and he's playing the uke. Yep. It's a wonderful thing. Anyway, that aside, why is somebody playing an ukulele on a TED Talk?
Specifically, the message that he was trying to get out there is that if you take classical forms of music or alternate forms of music and play them differently, it can transfer a different emotion than originally played. So originally, Bohemian Rhapsody was played on with drums, electric guitars, some keyboard. Mm-hmm. But with the ukulele, the whole song just feels different. It's still the same song in essence, but it's got a lighter feel to it. And the TED Talk specifically was about sharing your love of music and exploring new avenues with some familiar material.
Very nice. That's very cool. That's kind of in keeping with the TED mission. So
yeah,
I like that. I like that a lot.
It was very cool. All right, man. Anything else you want to bring up this week? We're running a touch long.
Yeah, which is about par for the course for us.
Yeah.
no, I just wanted to remind people that if you're interested in beer, or you're interested in what I might have to say about a beer, just go to ratebeer.com and look me up. I'm Del Noche.
Excellent. I would say that I'm doing some really interesting things, but really it's just all about this podcast and the website and messing around with that. If you go to the website, it might be broken. Hopefully I'll have all that fixed. Trial and error is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's in a state of flux right now.
Yes, very much so. But I should have that by the end of the weekend fixed and operational again. But yeah, you can go to ritualmisery.com and see that. We'll have our own personal blogs up there shortly and have all that kind of stuff going on. If you like the podcast, cruise on over to iTunes and hit rate it, hit the little stars on there. We'd really appreciate that. Leave us some feedback.
And tell your friends about it too.
Yes. I blasted it out to all of my Facebook friends and I've had quite a few people actually listen to it. One of my coworkers, another mass sergeant, listened to it, and he said he got through about half of it before he got called away to do something else, but he liked what he heard, so he should be listening from now on. So I appreciate that.
Right on.
Although I have to, of course, be careful about pimping the show at work, the whole conflict of interest thing. But if you are interested in what I'm up to and the sarcastic comments that I like to make about everyday life, you can look me up. Ethan Kane on Twitter is where you'll find all of that. You can follow the show on Twitter at Ritual Misery. And if you find something that you want to talk that you would like us to talk about, cruise on over to our subreddit, ritualmisery.reddit.com, and leave us some ideas there. Or just look at the stories that we put in there. Usually we put our own stories in there for the week so that we can read them. And you can tell us what you think about that. Give us some thoughts on that. Maybe open our eyes to something that we hadn't seen or hadn't noticed before. If you want to email us, you can email us at podcast@ritualmisery.com. Of course, I mentioned our home on the web is ritualmisery.com. That's in flux. It's in development and it's going pretty well. Doing some wonderful things on there. And if you would like to call and leave us a voicemail, you can do that at 567-69-TRMPC. That's 567-698-7672. The music that will be cutting in right now is courtesy of Kevin McLeod. He makes some great stuff over there at incomtech.com. Thank you for listening. And for Kent, for me, and for you, this is your Ritual Misery Podcast.
See ya. Yeah. I've Yeah, you can just kill my audio at that point. Yeah, I was debating if I was even going to say it. I was like, I forgot to say my Twitter. Well, fuck it. I'm throwing it in. I'm going for it. You know, I don't know. Whatever.